I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Our good friend Isaiah Poole from the Campaign for America's Future is going to be talking about jobs, the job numbers, how we create jobs, where we go from here, since obviously the GOP, the Grand Obstructionist Party, they don't seem to have a clue. Not one iota of a clue on how to create jobs. Everything we hear from them is cut. Constriction. Get rid of people. Fire teachers, fire city workers, fire state workers, fire people. That's what they want. Because what they want to do is they want to lower everybody's wages. They want everything to come down so we can get down there with the Chinese and the Mexicans. So that those jobs can then come back and they can exploit the American workforce like they do the Chinese. See how wonderful that is? It's a great plan. And they're pretty open about it, too. Anyway, we're going to be talking to Isaiah about that. In the second hour, Justin Flores, he's one of the folks in North Carolina protesting J.P. Morgan Chase and a bunch of other banks who give Reynolds America money give them loans and credit. While they're cheating their farm workers and really committing some serious, serious human rights abuses in the tobacco fields down there. So it's a real workers' issue. We're going to talk about that in the second hour. We're going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Well, you know, I think the right has now found their footing. They found the footing on how to deal with the president finding Bin Laden. Now, whereas their guy Bush never really bothered to look, so they've now found their footing. And here it is, simply put: basically, twist everything and distort everything that comes out. Anything being put out, you've got to destroy it, twist it, and distort it. Wait a minute, that's basically what they do on every issue. Scorched earth is their ethos. Huh. Maybe I'm not onto something there after all. But like you, I've been following this 24/7 news cycle with each of the very few corporate-controlled media conglomerates trying to put their very unique inside spin on what happened. You know, each story that comes out, the way I'm looking at it, is designed to make this president look bad, to make the administration look weak, to make them look indecisive, to make them look like they're bickering back and forth between each other. We keep hearing the stories. He was armed. He wasn't armed. They went to him right away. They didn't. He was using his wife as a shield. He wasn't. You know, all of this stuff to create some doubt, to create some possibility that, you know, he could be lying. You know, I was listening to Lindball today. He was blathering on about, you know, this is the exact stuff. Well, Bin Laden didn't have a gun. How the SEAL team missed the first shot. And how, you know, they crashed or they didn't. And all of this stuff on and on. And the more I listen to him, the more I'm going, well, which side of this are you on? I mean, it's about making Obama look bad at all costs. But he doesn't want to go too far because we're still happy that bin Laden's gone. It's kind of an interesting little thing. And yet, on the other hand, they want Bush to get credit for it. So I guess the question is does Bush deserve credit for it? Does he deserve the political credit for it? I don't think so. And they're saying that, well, you know, this is just a partisan issue. But the reality is, what I've been finding is that this had nothing to do with Bush. Nothing at all. And you had Santorum out here yesterday saying something really stupid. Here he is.
9/11 families and everybody else in America should be furious at this president that he's walking around taking credit for, you know, getting Osama bin Laden. He didn't get Osama bin Laden. The people who Eric Holder is going after are the folks who got Osama bin Laden. They put him there, and the President of the United States simply said, courageous act, give him credit for saying yes, but that's all he did was say yes. He didn't do the hard work. The people who did the hard work are the folks he's going after, and that is an outrage.
So he's basically, again, you know, this whole right-wing mean that, well, the president didn't do anything. And what I'm telling you is, he completely went against the Bush policy. Basically turned his back on the entire Bush policy. Understand that when President Obama took office, he refocused on bin Laden, something that Bush had chosen to ignore. What Bush chose to do was try to take on the entire Muslim world. He wasn't focused on bin Laden anymore. You needed him out there to keep people riled up, yes. So when Obama took office, and you'll remember this, he got beat up constantly for reaching out to the Muslim world to try and undo all the damage that Bush had done. Obama dumped the concept of this global war on terror. So when Condi claimed that the operation to get bin Laden was a good story for continuity across two presidencies, she's trying to insinuate somehow that Obama continued the Bush policies, and he didn't. And that's why the radical right had beat him up right from the start, if you'll remember. But now that it worked, they want a little credit for it. They want a little of the focus. And the reality is Obama, the Obama administration, right from the start, said, we're going to get him. They focused on Osama bin Laden, and they got him. Now, you go back to the Bush frame, which was, we got to have this war on terror, which is really a bad frame. I mean, what's next, the war on apathy? I never got the whole war on terror thing. But understand that Bush and the neocons needed something to start another Cold War, to start another major initiative. And what's better than an enemy that you can define? Back in 2006, Bush said, this is a great ideological struggle of the 21st century. And it's a calling of our generation. Freedom! Freedom is once again contending with the forces of darkness and tyranny. Tyranny, that's right. The terrorists who seek to impose a totalitarian Islamic empire. Not quite the power there. They don't have that kind of power. But Bush needed to prop them up. Needed that. And no one but the... no one with the exception of the most ardent Bush backer would argue that Al-Qaeda posed anywhere near of a threat of the Soviet Union or the Germans. But that's what Bush was selling. That's what the neocons were selling, that they're out there. We need to fight the war on terror. And what he did is he basically fought it by the seat of his pants. There was no plan. There was nothing. It was, we just want to take as much money as possible. We're going to screw things up. And that's what they did. So it's no surprise that they couldn't find bin Laden, who we now find out for several years was living in the same house. Had not left that compound for 5 years, they said. It's not surprising to me that he was there. And we didn't know it because we forgot him. The focus was on a much wider prize. So when Barack Obama took office and started saying, you know what, we're going after bin Laden, we're going to heal the wounds with the rest of the world, the right went nuts because their grand war, their Cold War, their new Cold War was gone. All that they had fought and worked for, gone. So now that he won't take these photos and rub the Muslim world's nose in it, the right's even more incensed. And they're going to sue and they're going to do all this stuff so that they can get those photos out there to enrage the Muslim world. Again, to poke at Obama. And today you see the agency France Presse reported that more than 100 Islamic extremists rallied outside the U.S. embassy today because they're ticked off. Why do you want to give them more to be ticked off about? Why do you want to see that number go from 100 to 500 or to 1,000? But that's what the right wants. Because they're not happy unless there's chaos. They're not happy unless there's something, some tragedy to exploit. And what frustrates me about this whole thing is they somehow want to give Bush credit for something he didn't do. He said it time and time again, you know, I just don't spend that much time thinking about him. I don't know where he is. I don't spend that much time thinking about him. I mean, that should put this whole, we need to get Bush in credit, to rest. What do you think, Jake?
I think you're absolutely right. If I can say one other thing, I mean, I think a lot of people are underestimating what kind of gamble this was. I mean, I just heard tonight some added information that even with all the technology we have, Rick, Osama bin Laden was that disciplined that he did not do things, and he deliberately, he was so structured and disciplined that he did not do anything that could positively identify him even within the structure because he knew we had the capabilities.
And they claim that they actually had a CIA agent living right next door, and they still could not. But the big gamble here is not that they went in and they missed him. The big gamble is if you do this, if you go into there, you have violated the sovereignty of the Pakistani government. And that is a tenuous circumstance to begin with. If you go in, you blow it, you screw this up, you risk the rest of the world turning against you. This was not an easy call. This was not just go get him. He made the right call. He made the call he said he would make right from the beginning. If he had actionable intelligence, he was going in. He did. He should be given the credit for that. Not Bush.
Well, and remember this. You know this to be true. No matter what the president will have done from now until the election, they would have hung this around his neck with the golden noose and said, another Jimmy Carter, ineffective.
Operation Eagle Claw.
Ineffective, can't handle it, doesn't deserve a second term. You absolutely know that would have happened.
Oh, of course. You would have heard the Operation Eagle Claw cry from now until next November. And, you know, here's the thing. The guy did it smart, and that's what ticks them off. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right back after this with Isaiah Poole from the Campaign for America's Future. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Laborers International Union of North America President Terrence O'Sullivan says it's time for a more radical labor movement in light of the strong attacks on fundamental labor rights. O'Sullivan's remarks came during the 125th anniversary of May Day, commemorated in Chicago's Haymarket Square. It was the rededication of the newly restored monument at the grave of the four Haymarket martyrs, executed in 1887 for the Haymarket bombing. That bombing happened during a rally for the 8-hour day.
Just as the men and women of Haymarket stood united and stood fearless in the face of corporate terror, today we must stand united and stand fearless in the face of corporate tyranny. Instead of being at the wrong end of a Pinkerton's baton, working men and women today are at the wrong end of a lawmaker's gavel or a governor's pen. Targets of wealthy special interests who don't want us standing in the way of their greedy agenda. When we're fighting just to hold on to our very lives, there is no movement too radical. And there is no movement to militants.
Yeah. O'Sullivan Audio, courtesy of WORT Radio in Madison. California is moving toward a universal health care system, but it's not expected to happen quickly. Jesse Russell reports.
On Wednesday, the California State Senate Health Committee passed a bill out of committee that would provide government-funded health care through public-private partnerships. Nearly 100 taxpayers attended the hearing to speak out in support of the legislation, but no taxpayers showed to speak against it. Only four organizations sent representatives to fight the bill. Two of those organizations were the California Association of Insurance and the Chamber of Commerce. The bill's author is Mark Leno, who spoke before the meeting began.
Publicly financed, privately provided health care. Your doctor does not change. Your clinic does not change. Your hospital does not change. What changes is how efficiently we pay for it.
The bill still has a long road ahead of it, and Leno admitted it could take years. Vermont's bill is currently in conference committee, but will likely be on the governor's desk soon. However, the Green Mountain State's plan couldn't go into effect until 2014, when the federal government will start providing waivers for states to establish their own health care plans.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. And by the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, Iron Ship Builders, Blacksmiths, Forgers, and Helpers.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Today, back in 1933, President Franklin Roosevelt signed an executive order creating the Works Progress Administration, the WPA. And out of the 10 million jobless people in the U.S. in 1935, 3 million of them were employed by the WPA to build things such as highways, schools, hospitals, airports, playgrounds, you name it, they built it. And a lot of the stuff's still around today. And the reality is Franklin Roosevelt believed in the principles of fairness and justice. And as I've been talking about for the longest time, instead of handing out more unemployment, we need to get people back to work to get their, to keep their skills freshly honed and to keep that. I do believe there's a therapeutic quality to work, a self-respect, something that we all feel. And that's why, from right from the beginning, I thought that that's what the president should have done in cleaning up Bush's debacle. Anyway, I've asked Isaiah Poole from the Campaign for America's Future to come talk to us about how we create the jobs that are so desperately needed. Ourfuture.org is their website. Isaiah, thanks for taking time for me.
I appreciate it.
You know, I look back, like I said, this day in 1933, President Roosevelt said, you know what, we need to put people back to work. We need infrastructure. We need schools. We need all this stuff. Let's put them back to work building that stuff. I say we should be doing the same thing right now.
And, you know, the initial WPA spending was, at that time, a jaw-dropping $1.2 or $3 billion for the first year of that program, which would work out to about $20 billion in today's dollars. And this astounding thing about the debate is that if you came out today and said, We ought to have a $20 billion jobs program. You'd be hooted out of the, you'd be hooted out of the room.
Well, I mean, with the people who are in the room right now, but the reality
is... people who are in the room right now, exactly.
But the reality is, at some point, you have to look around and you have to see the infrastructure that was built in the 30s and 40s is now crumbling and
absolutely
needs repair in the most desperate of ways.
Absolutely. And the other thing you look at is today's jobs report. Most of the headlines are saying that we've created more jobs in a single month than we have private sector jobs that we have since the recovery began.
Yeah, how many of those were McDonald's jobs?
62,000.
Wow. That's not a recovery to me.
That's not the kind of recovery that gets you where you need to be as a country. That you can't, you can't sustain a family on a McDonald's job. You can't send a kid to college on a McDonald's job.
You know,
and that's what most of the jobs that have been created over the last few months have been. They've been at that level. And we really need to jumpstart the kind of solid middle-class jobs. And you do that through the investment in infrastructure. And you do that through... the waterworks, and you do that through upgrading our electrical grid, and what you get from that is that you've laid the foundation for a very strong private sector recovery that goes on over the long term. It's not just public spending, but it is investment that really jump starts the private sector and really puts America back on its feet in the global economy.
Which, I mean, right now, we're here in Pennsylvania, they're talking about allowing the extensions to, you know, just to go away. May 20th, if we don't get an unemployment bill, a whole bunch of federal money we lose, and tens of thousands of people here in the state of Pennsylvania lose their extended unemployment bill benefits. I say take that money and set up a jobs program, help those folks get back to work, even if the government has to be the employer of last resort.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, we've done this before. I have been the beneficiary of government jobs when I was a teenager. And that's how I got my foot in the door of the workforce. I was living in a low income neighborhood here in Washington, D.C. And at that time, there was money that was appropriated for the express purpose of lowering youth unemployment in inner city areas. And because of that, I was able to I got off the street. I learned how to show up at work every day. And I was able to parlay that experience into, you know, a succession of successful jobs.
You know, Isaiah, I've been saying for the longest time that there's a therapeutic quality to doing just what you've talked about. Getting up every day, going to work, accomplishing something. There's a therapeutic quality that makes you, you know, maybe hold your head a little higher, maybe have a little bit better self-esteem that you're earning your way. And I think what's going on right now, too many of the folks who've been unemployed long-term, they're losing that ability to hold their head up.
That is why the budget discussion that we're having in Washington is so off track. And one of the things that we're going to be doing starting next week at the Campaign for America's Future is launching something that we're labeling the American Majority effort. We've looked at polling from the Washington Post, from the Wall Street Journal, from Gallup, and from a number of other sources. And whatever poll you look at is the same message. The American public, when you give them the choice between slashing the budget the way the Republicans are doing it and investing money in jobs and focusing on job creation, they will tell you by margins that average 2-1 that they want the effort on job creation first, because they understand that if we do just what you're saying, get people out of their houses, off the unemployment rolls, into jobs where they're collecting a paycheck, they're spending money, they're paying taxes, that begins to grow the economy and begins to reduce the deficit over time.
Yep. And it makes perfect sense. And that's the thing that I think the Republicans hate about it. And the other thing that they really, really hate about it is it shows that government can work. I mean, they've spent the better part of 30 years tearing our government apart, making it look ineffective, doing everything that they can do to be able to turn back and say, see, look, government doesn't work. Like George Bush appointing Brownie to the head FEMA, a guy who has
exactly.
No business even in a building near FEMA, let alone running it, and then they're surprised he can't do it?
Well, that's why the Republican jobs plan, the Senate Republican jobs plan that was released earlier this week, it's amazing because it's not about creating jobs. It's about shrinking and disempowering government. The elements of that are, you know, balanced budget amendment. It's taking regulatory authority away from agencies and centralizing it in Congress. It's about, you know, it's about all of these making sure that corporations are not accountable to the public and that government can't act as an agent of the people to protect the people and to serve the people.
Well, that is their belief structure. I mean, when Grover Norquist said he wanted to make government small enough he could drag it in the bathtub, we're seeing what happens.
Exactly right.
When they do that.
So one of the things that we're hoping to do over the next few weeks is to drill into the public debate the fact that the American public, the majority of Americans, are actually not on board with the Republican agenda of austerity and budget cutting, particularly budget cutting when it comes to the kinds of things that we need for an economic recovery. They're not on board with this notion that the only people who get to sacrifice are the people at the lower end of the income ladder, and that millionaires and billionaires get additional tax cuts. The majority of the public wants millionaires and billionaires, to the extent to which there needs to be sacrifice, for them to bear the sacrifice, more of the sacrifice, because they have the capacity to bear that sacrifice.
Well, they're the ones who control all the wealth, Isaiah. We should ask more from them. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Isaiah Poole from the Campaign for America's Future, OurFuture.org. Have you seen this thing called the People's Budget put out by the Congressional Progressive Caucus?
Yes, I have. And, in fact, a few weeks ago talked to Keith Ellison, Congressman Keith Ellison, who is one of the co-chairs of the Congressional Progressive Caucus about that budget. It is a budget that a lot of impartial observers have said is really sort of the adult budget in the room, because it takes on that issue of saying, look, the millionaires and billionaires have the capacity to step up to the plate and pay more in taxes. We, particularly now that Osama bin Laden is dead, we can have a serious discussion about winding down the war in Afghanistan quickly and diverting some of those defense resources into domestic spending. It is idiotic to talk about cutting Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, and also cutting job training and cutting state aid for teachers and first responders and things like that. It makes more sense to get the economy growing and moving. And by the way, growing and moving doesn't mean treading water as we're doing right now, but it means actual growth.
Yeah, you know, we had Representative Raul Grijalva on the program last week talking about this. And, you know, the more I read into it and the more I look at it, the more I wish people would take a look at it and compare it to the Ryan budget, which is The Ryan budget to me is hand all the wealth to the people who are already super wealthy, and you people at the bottom, you're basically screwed in all this. You're out of luck.
It's real unfortunate. I think you're right, and I think it's real unfortunate that the mainstream media did not help in raising exposure to budget and having that sort of conversation about it. Those of us who have looked at it said, look, this is – they did real work. This was not – as I, you know, I looked at the Senate Republican jobs proposal earlier, and it's basically a bunch of thrown together old talking points that Republicans have been using for years. It could have been written in someone's sleep. The Congressional Progressive Caucus budget is a serious proposal. It is as serious and as sober as the Ryan document and should be treated as such.
And the part that I like about it the best is it has a Make It in the U.S. jobs program.
Absolutely does. The Senate Democrats this week unveiled or reintroduced a lot of their Make It in America proposals this week. They are in the minority in the House, so there's very little that they can do to advance those things. But it is very important for those of us outside on the outside to keep the drumbeat up.
Yep. But here's the thing: we've got the Senate, you've got a president who has got the bully pulpit. I'm discouraged by the fact that he has allowed this frame to continue. I mean, he did kind of draw a line in the sand a little bit on Social Security and Medicare, but he's still focusing on the spending cut frame that we need to cut, instead of saying we need a balanced approach of raising revenue for the folks who have been doing really well, and maybe some reasonable cuts where we can, instead of, hey, let's chuck Medicare and basically push Granny out on an island, and hey, let's whack this so that those folks are harmed.
The ray of hope is that during the town halls, when that Medicare voucherization, that Medicare privatization got shopped around, there was grassroots rebellion against that proposal. And as a result of that, many of the House Republicans have begun to back away from embracing that proposal. Ryan is no longer insisting that plan be at the center of any deal to raise the debt ceiling, for example. So there's a bit of a ray of hope that populist progressive pushback can begin to reverse some of this and give President Obama the room to actually do what I think is in President Obama's heart of hearts he would like to do, which is to break out of this box a little bit more and be the kind of president that we elected him to be.
Well, now that he's got this, this bump from going after Bin Laden, maybe we see some of this. Maybe now that the campaign Obama's back, maybe we start seeing some of the movement.
Well, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. But I think again, we've got to have that sustained pressure. What happens? We know why the Tea Party Republicans have gotten so much of their way. And that's because they've got a bunch of angry folks on the sideline, and John Boehner walks into the White House and says to President Obama, you know, look, I've got these guys over here. They won't budge. They won't let me cut the deal. And I think we've got to have some people on the left that will force President Obama to say, look at those guys over there. They're not going to let me cut this deal.
Yep, and that's where I thought labor should have played a much stronger role these last year and a half, the last 2 years. I just really, really wished it was much harder. Isaiah, I appreciate your time, brother. Keep up the great work there at the Campaign for America's Future. Ourfuture.org is the website. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I got no time now. Before I cry now. Before I say it, I wanna say.
Rick Smith Show.
It's good to know that the FBI, Justice Department, and federal courts are all over the major crime cases that so dramatically affect millions of Americans, like the 7-year prosecution and $6 million trial of baseball player Barry Bonds. What a waste of time, tax dollars, and prosecutorial credibility. Meanwhile, not a single major player in Wall Street's mugging of our economy has even been charged, much less imprisoned. People were robbed of hundreds of billions of dollars, and millions of jobs, homes, and businesses were lost. Yet the banksters not only skated free, they're now collecting billions in bonus payments for their work. A New York Times investigative report reveals that top Washington officials, Republicans and Democrats, rushed to the crime scene at the start of the financial crash. They rushed not to arrest anyone, but to stave off any serious investigations of the top Wall Streeters who had obviously cooked their books, fraudulently awarded bonuses to themselves, cashed in on inside information, and lied to regulators. Barry Bonds might have been juiced up on steroids, but these guys were juiced up on hubris and greed, doing criminal damage to America. Yet, the FBI was backed off, the Justice Department averted its eyes, and bank regulators failed to bill criminal cases. Why? Because top politicos, from Bush to Obama, were convinced by their Wall Street confidants that prosecutions would make big investors jittery and endanger the markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, a couple of weeks after Japan's nuclear meltdown began, a photograph ran worldwide showing a trio of the nuclear plant's top corporate executives. They were at the hospital bedside of a victim of radiation poisoning, and they were bowing deeply in apology. Now that's the picture of Wall Street executives that I want to see.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425. Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
A new Borowitz report out today. A new survey of likely voters indicates that in a hypothetical matchup between the former quitter Alaska Governor Sarah Palin and billionaire Donald Trump, a majority would choose suicide over either candidate. The poll conducted by the University of Minnesota's Opinion Research Institute shows Mr. Trump drawing 21%, Governor Palin 18%, and various forms of suicide, 61%. According to the poll, throwing yourself in front of a speeding bus was the most popular means of suicide at 22%, with jumping off the roof of a really tall building or bridge coming in second at 17%. According to pollster David Logsdon, the surging popularity of suicide bodes ill for both Governor Palin and Mr. Trump as potential 2012 presidential candidates. Logsdon said, it's still very early, but even at this stage of the game, the prospect of one of those two being nominated shouldn't be making voters want to kill themselves in these numbers. Reached at his home in New York City, Mr. Trump pointed out that while he did not do well against suicide, he still polled higher than Governor Palin, adding that it's better than a sharp stick in the eye. But Mr. Logsdon was quick to throw cold water on Mr. Trump's upbeat assessment because in a head-to-head matchup, a sharp stick in the eye beats Donald Trump by a 2-1 margin. Meanwhile, quitter Governor Palin called for the White House to release pictures of Osama bin Laden, arguing that she only reads books with pictures. Very, very nice. You see, she's got something in common with George Bush. A picture book. Gotta love that. Oil baron David Koch is in the news. Evidently, he told New York Magazine that Obama is a hardcore socialist. And he said that he's marvelous at pretending to be something other than that. But that's what I believe he truly is, a hardcore socialist. He scares me, says David Koch. So the billionaire brother behind the American Prosperity and the Cato Institute and Competitive Enterprise Institute and all of those right-wing think tanks, he's scared. You gotta be freaking kidding me. He's also behind the Reason Foundation. The Reason Foundation. In addition to being scared, you gotta laugh at this stuff because it's almost silly. But he says instead of being afraid of the hardcore socialist, he is gonna give no credit, to Bin Laden for Bin Laden being killed. And again, back to that right-wing frame that his think tanks put out there. He just made the decision. It was obvious where the guy was. See, it was obvious. And he was one of the worst terrorists in the world, organized against the United States, see? He said, I mean, no president in his right mind would not approve that kind of decision to eliminate him. He was right there, all the time, obvious, right there. Except for the last, 9 years, nobody bothered to go knock on the door of the place? Gotta love the Koch brothers. I know I wish I had his money, but that's another story. Orrin Hatch, one of my least favorite senators from Utah, a good Republican there, says that the problem with the country, the reason we got all these problems is because poor people don't pay enough taxes. That's what it is. He says, you know, you gotta get revenue from the middle class, and that's where the money is. So he claims that we have this unbalanced tax code where only the wealthy pay taxes. And he said, quote, I intend to see that it's changed. Not to hurt the poor. We should help the poor. But to make sure that it's their civic duty on their part, everyone, to help the government to be better. Yeah, that's it. Except here's the problem. The reality is, most of the people, the majority of the people who don't pay taxes, they don't even meet the lowest bracket minimums. And what happens is we've got a country where 400 people own more than half of the combined wealth of this country. And they're paying really extraordinarily low rates compared to generations of the past. And somehow we seem to think that, well, we're taxed enough already. We now have the largest gap between those who have and those who do not have in the industrialized world. We're right there with Uganda and Pakistan. What does that say? Hatch said he's also worried that, you know, if we tax the rich, it's going to hurt job creation, which is absolutely ludicrous. But the Hatch man tweeted earlier this week, 51% of households did not pay any federal income tax in 2009. It's easy to see why they want more government benefits that they aren't paying for. Very nice. And when you look at the tax numbers, Jake, I mean, it's pretty interesting that we have seen corporations walking away from their responsibilities. In fact, of all of the federal revenue that comes in, only 9% of it is corporate taxes. 9%. And McClatchy had an interesting story today where they asked what the dirty little secret is here in the U.S.? We're actually undertaxed. Not you and me, of course, but the very wealthy are actually under, well, we all are taxed at lower rates. We keep using this frame, though, that we're spending too much when the reality is we're just not taking in enough revenue. And we've got these two wars that we just can't seem to get away with. We want to be starting a third, it looks like. But according to the Office of Management and Budget, of the federal revenues, like I said, 81% came from income and payroll. 9% came from corporate taxes, 3.5% from federal excise tax, and 6% from other sources. Now, you look at from World War II on. When it was 18%, about 18% of the gross domestic product went to revenue, to taxes, to the government. up until Shrub took office during that big expansion of the 90s, that was up to 21%. So we had this growing economy. We had this expanding economy. You got the little Shrub who comes in, slashes taxes in 2001, slashes them again in 2003, giving away not only the surplus, but also Greenspan's concern over, oh, gee, what could happen if we paid the debt off too fast? What kind of country would we become? And now you look at the reality is, we're paying a little under 14.5%, the lowest level since the 1950. So during that Bush years, what we've seen is this massive redistribution of wealth from people like you and me, Jake, people who work and bust their behinds, to people who sit on their behinds and collect dividend checks, the welfare kings.
Now we're going back and we're reliving the George Bush era, if you remember, in the first 2 years. And I know you don't like Bill Clinton, but Bill Clinton left him about $250 billion in the red. And within 2 years, we went from $250 to $50 billion in the red. George Bush spent about $600 billion. We wound up in 2 short years. We find ourselves $350 billion in debt. That's prior to the war, and that's prior to a couple other things that he passed that we didn't pay for. People rewrite history. They act like, well, you know, George Bush was a good president, and you're blaming everything on him. Well, yeah, because he was responsible. Bill Clinton, for all his faults, left a surplus when he left.
Yeah, he left us in the black. In the red is the other way, right?
Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. To the plus.
That's right.
I'm sorry.
And Bush was not a good president.
I had my collars.
Bush was not a good president. Don't do that ever again.
No, I wasn't trying
don't,
to
don't
say
even it. Don't even infer that someone might think that. Because it's not true. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
This is why we fight, why we lie. This is why we fight.
Finally, radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make history happen!
My name's Diane. I'm a single mom. I have twin boys who are 19, Alex and Tyler. We were a very close family, and I miss them a lot when they're away at school.
I definitely miss her. Yeah, I mean, she did our laundry back when we were home. Now we got to do it ourselves, so if nothing else, that's why we miss her.
Diane wanted individual health insurance for her sons, but she needed something affordable.
Health insurance is important because all it would take was one accident, and I could lose everything I worked for.
So she did her research and called Georgiana at Capital Blue Cross.
Georgiana was great right from the beginning. She stepped me through the entire process, and the coverage is wonderful. They have a great plan, and it's affordable. I feel like I can sleep at night knowing that my boys are covered.
My mom will always be the smartest one.
Text radio to 74574 for a sample quote. Message and data rates may apply. Your final quote may vary. Please don't text and drive. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Keeping the Chambers of Commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
Ready for you. I'm standing up, I'm on to it. I'm a soldier, so let's go.
Every time I hear this song, I think of the old Weird Al Yankovic. Another one, Rides the Bus. I was just thinking that. I was going, well, how am I going to take off on Another One Rides the Bus? And that's not even the words of the song. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Well, the Republicans have finally come out with a jobs bill. That's right. They have a jobs bill down in Florida. Governor Rick Scott has come up with this. The Republicans there have come up with a great jobs bill. You know what it is? Mandatory drug testing for welfare recipients. That's right. That's soon going to be the law, and it's going to create some jobs. Jobs of people taking the tests. I'm wondering who's going to pay for it. Who's going to pay for these tests? Will it be you and me, the taxpayer? The governor says, well, it's fair to taxpayers. They're paying the bill. And they often get screened at their jobs. So the people who are taking drugs should be screened as well. It's going to cost people, anyone on TANF, which is temporary aid for needy families, anyone on this is going to be charged $35 for the test, and they will be reimbursed as long as they pass. So you getting this? You're going to have to hold off on feeding your kids your $35 just so we can make sure you're not on crack. People who do test positive, they will lose their benefits for a year. If you get a second failed test, you will lose it for 3 years. Parents will have to designate another adult to collect benefits for their children. The measure provides absolutely no funding for treatment whatsoever. That sounds very Republican, doesn't it? Don't solve the problem. We just want suffering. And really, this is about kicking people off the program. It's a twofold winner. You know, you kick people off the program, and then you open up new profit opportunities. You know, like drug testing. There's going to be a whole wave of people coming in to want to be the one to get that big lucrative government contract to test these people. And I think prisons are going to be a big winner, which is why it's interesting that while he was campaigning, Rick Scott was proposing privatizing the prisons in Florida. So on Monday, both the Senate and the House in Florida agreed to do just that. They've agreed to move thousands of inmates to profits run by for-profit corporations in an 18-county region of South Florida. How cozy. And you go, gee, how'd that happen? Well, it happened because a whole bunch of campaign contributions went to Republicans and to Mr. Scott. In fact, Geo Group, they're one of the largest private corrections corporations in the country. They gave $400,000 to Republicans and the maximum $25,000 to Rick Scott. How cozy is that? And you stop and you think about who Scott has surrounded himself with. The guy who basically threw his inaugural ball. This super lobbyist named Ballard. Named Brian Ballard. He's a lobbyist for who? Yes, that's right. Corrections Corporations of America. See, you knew. Who also gave over almost $400,000 in contributions in Florida. With the majority of them going to Republicans. See, you're getting it. You're getting it. Meanwhile, there's another company who's coming in. They want a piece of the prison pie as well. They've given a boatload of money to Scott and to the Republicans. And I like what David Merle, the Police Benevolent Association president, said. He said, basically, this is just a gift to the private prison industry. He says it's very political. The private corporations have been very helpful to the governor and his people. So this is payback. And what I find interesting is you have folks who don't seem to think that it's important that we know those basic little details. Like who gave money to who? Where'd the money come from? And I ask you, should people know what money is going from where to who to what to why? Should there be disclosure laws for corporations? Should we know that the Corrections Corporations of America funded part of his campaign and pushed a whole bunch of money to him? In return, they got big lucrative contracts. Should we know that? Well, this is what the president's saying. And I think most rational people want to know. If you're getting taxpayer dollars, I want to know who you're buying off. So on Friday, what I find interesting, 21 Republicans, led by House Majority Leader Eric Cantor and Majority Whip Kevin McCarthy, sent a letter to the president asking the president to not issue his executive order. In fact, called it a blatant attempt to intimidate and potentially silence certain speakers who engage in their constitutionally protected free speech rights. They're talking about corporations. You know that, don't you? They're saying we need to protect the corporations' rights. Because the story goes, if the executive order is implemented, it would require, according to a copy of the draft, that companies bidding on all federal contracts disclose their contributions to parties and the candidates as well, and this is the kicker part, as well as donations to third-party entities that fund independent expenditures. So they want to know what's going into all of these Karl Rove groups and all of these attack groups. I love Dan Lundgren, Republican from California, his statement. Said this is a brazen attempt to skirt the legislative process and force partisan policies rejected by Congress last year. And Minority Leader Mitch McConnell called the order the crassest political move he's ever seen. This is almost gangster politics, he said, to shut down people who would oppose them. I assure you, this is going to create problems for them in many ways, seen and unseen, if they go forward. Help me out here, just a little bit. Help me out here, Mitch. But what exactly do you call what's going on in Wisconsin and Ohio and Michigan and New Hampshire and Maine and Tennessee and Oklahoma and Nebraska and Utah and Pennsylvania and all in these red states where they're going after workers' rights? What exactly do you call that, Mitch? Call it exactly what you're claiming. Now, what the president is simply doing, he said, we want to know where the money's going. And I think transparency, sunshine, good thing.
Absolutely. If I can comment, you know, some of the things that are happening in some of these states, Rick, I mean, it's just, you talk about anti-democratic, you talk about almost totalitarian. When I look at what's happening in Michigan, I mean, it's hard for me to believe. We talked about this several times. It's hard for me to believe that's legal. Now, I know they're taking it to court, but to give the power that governor and the Republican legislature has given to these financial czars is just overwhelming. It's something I've never seen before. It's almost as if we go back to the feudal times and they kind of, as a reward, they gave to one of their nephews who was a very wealthy, very well-connected, rich family. They gave him a parcel of land and gave him all that power, gave him unlimited power. It's unbelievable. And
it is.
And yet we tout ourselves as all this freedom we have in our country, and we're a democratic republic. But what they're doing in Michigan is so undemocratic. It smacks of totalitarianism.
It is the conservative way. 1-888-520-RICK. We're back after this.
Defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Laborers International Union of North America President Terrence O'Sullivan says it's time for a more radical labor movement in light of the strong attacks on fundamental labor rights. O'Sullivan's remarks came during the 125th anniversary of May Day, commemorated in Chicago's Haymarket Square.
It was a rededication of the newly restored monument at the grave of the four Haymarket martyrs, executed in 1887 for the Haymarket bombing. That bombing happened during a rally for the eight-hour day.
Just as the men and women of Haymarket stood united and stood fearless in the face of corporate terror, today we must stand united and stand fearless in the face of corporate tyranny. Instead of being at the wrong end of a Pinkerton's baton, working men and women today are at the wrong end of a lawmaker's gavel or a governor's pen. Targets of wealthy special interests who don't want us standing in the way of their greedy agenda. When we're fighting just to hold on to our very lives, there is no movement too radical. And there is no movement too militant.
Yeah. O'Sullivan Audio, courtesy of WORT Radio in Madison. California is moving toward a universal health care system, but it's not expected to happen quickly. Jesse Russell reports.
On Wednesday, the California State Senate Health Committee passed a bill out of committee that would provide government-funded health care through public-private partnerships. Nearly 100 taxpayers attended the hearing to speak out in support of the legislation, but no taxpayers showed to speak against it. Only four organizations sent representatives to fight the bill. Two of those organizations were the California Association of Insurance and the Chamber of Commerce. The bill's author is Mark Leno, who spoke before the meeting began.
Publicly financed, privately provided health care. Your doctor does not change. Your clinic does not change. Your hospital does not change. What changes is how efficiently we pay for it.
The bill still has a long road ahead of it, and Leno admitted it could take years. Vermont's bill is currently in conference committee, but will likely be on the governor's desk soon. However, the Green Mountain State's plan couldn't go into effect until 2014, when the federal government will start providing waivers for states to establish their own health care plans.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. And by the International Brotherhood of Boilermakers, Iron Ship Builders, Blacksmiths, Forgers, and Helpers.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
This battle, take my union gun. Gonna end this world of slavery, for this war is one you're bound to lose. You fascists are bound to lose.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. According to UPI, the U.S. Department of Energy said a panel of experts was named to develop a set of best practices for the so-called fracking in the natural gas drilling industry. The panel of academics and analysts will make recommendations on how to best extract gas using the rock cracking process, while at the same time minimizing the risk of contamination of underground water supplies. And I look at this and I said, what we need is a whole panel full of industry people. A whole panel plus exactly one. So they can basically control it all. Anyway, Energy Secretary Stephen Chu, he said in a statement yesterday, quote, "We need to ensure we harness these resources safely." He said, "I am looking forward to hearing from these diverse, respected groups of experts on best practices for safe and responsible natural gas production. The hydraulic fracking process uses liquid chemicals pumped deep underground to break up the shale formations that contain significant volumes of gas. The chemicals, however, can include toxic substances that critics say make their way into well water." Or basically, as the guy down the street here at the Tinky Tank says, it's just water with sand in it. And, you know, some household chemicals, too. So nothing to worry about. Not perfectly safe, just some water with some sand. Don't worry about it. Go back to sleep. Go back to American Idol and Cheetos. The commission appointed by Chu includes university engineering professors. Uh-oh, this doesn't sound good for the industry. Environmental Defense Fund President Fred Krupp. Energy analyst Daniel Juergen. And John Deutsch, a former Energy Department official and CIA director who is now a professor at MIT. The seven-member panel, which does not include any industry executives, will submit a preliminary report in 90 days following formal recommendations in about 6 months, according to the Energy Department. The natural gas industry can't be happy. Can't be happy at all. Here's the thing. This whole natural gas problem, I can solve it simple. Real easy. This is an easy fix. What you do is you get all the CEOs, you get all the VPs and all the bigwigs and all the big investors, and you have them live right on the land where the drilling's going on. They drink the water, they bathe in the water, they brush their teeth, all of that. And no bottled water for them, none of that stuff. No. You get to drink from the flaming faucet. And if you can get water coming out with the flames out of the spigot, God bless you. That to me seems like one recourse. Another one, Jake, seems rational. As I say, I'm kind of coming around to the right-wing way of thinking. I think I'm going to become a right-wing radical because I see opportunity for profit, for government profit here. I say we don't pay any of the enforcement people a salary. Nothing. None of the investigators, none of the code enforcement people, none of the regulators, and none of those folks. What we do, because we're a meritocracy. Remember, we're this great meritocracy, and we should pay based on merit. So every inspector that goes out to one of these drilling rigs, they get paid by the fine. So however much money they collect in fines, they get a percentage of. So if they go to one of these drilling sites and they find, $10,000 worth of fines, we give them $1,000. If they go to one of those mines in West Virginia and they see a whole bunch of violations, they get paid by the fine. I think that's a good way to go. And we could just take it beyond that. OSHA, all OSHA inspectors paid by the fine, meat inspectors, you name it, all those people. There's money to be made here. We could solve. This is a way to solve our national debt. We just simply pay those people, and we train tens of thousands of them. In fact, we've got, 15 million unemployed? Let's have 15 million inspectors and pay them strict commission.
Well, think about that. It's a three-for-one there. First of all, you're saving money, a lot of taxpayer money. You're getting those who are responsible for these unsafe conditions to pay their fair share. And you're creating jobs. It's a three for one. That's brilliant, right?
I think this is the way we go.
I think the governor ought to hire you.
Maybe the right wing way to go is the way to go. Because there are tons of violations out there. It's just there's no incentive because the problem is it's run by government. I'm starting to get this right wing way of thinking. I think I've got it. So
kind of like a peace rate.
Yeah, exactly like a peace rate. This way, the governor could have no say in it whatsoever. See, as I've been saying for the longest time, enforcement laws are great if they're well-targeted and they're enforced. Safety rules are terrific if there's someone to enforce them. It's okay to say we don't want children working in factories. Or like the story I talked about in Mexico last week. The kid who got his arm ripped off in the mine. In Mexico, they have a law against child labor. Yet no one to enforce it. And the same thing here. I mean, there are violations. I've talked to people who've been to these drilling rigs. And they said there are violations everywhere. Just no one to inspect them. The one valve was open for 20 hours. No one around to inspect them. So I say this is a good opportunity. This is a good opportunity to balance our budget, solve our debt problems, privatize the enforcement of regulations. And, that could work for cops, too. We could pay cops based on how many tickets they write. This way, when you're driving up and down 81, there aren't people doing 100 miles an hour past you. I think we could be on to something here. This conservative world thing might work after all. I think I may be rethinking this. Of course, I'm being facetious, but at the end of it, you know, that man, you never know. Did you see the AP story today, Jake? Big headline, CEO pay exceeds pre-recession level.
I did see that.
The CEO class back happy, fat and happy. In fact, you know, I look at this and I ask myself, at what point do we as a nation start thinking that these people aren't worth it? You know, like I talked about yesterday, the average SEAL team member makes $54,000 a year. The average CEO makes about $11 million. Is that worth it? 200? I think the number was 210. You could hire 210 SEALs for every one Fortune 500 CEO. Is it worth it? I don't think a CEO is worth that much. I'm sorry. But yet we've got it in our head. We've been beaten into this belief that somehow these folks are worth all of this wealth, all of this admiration, and that when they screw up and they put their company into deep despair, that we should come in and somehow help them. It's one of those things that, you know, I'm just not quite getting. But again, you know, helping those who have been unemployed for 99 weeks. That's socialism. But handing out massive subsidies to the oil companies and massive tax breaks for multinationals to move jobs overseas, somehow that's good capitalist principle.
And don't forget the golden parachute. Now, we're taught in capitalism, you work hard, you succeed, you get rewarded. Well, apparently, capitalism in corporate America, you work hard, you fail, and you still get rewarded. It's good. It's a good job if you can get it.
The top ten CEOs made $444 million in 2010. Top ten, an average of $44 million apiece. You know, you just go, really? And there aren't people taking to the streets. I mean, I'm really waiting for the unemployed. If nothing happens here in Harrisburg. If the Republicans allow this money from the feds to go away, if they allow the unemployed to lose their benefit for the next couple of months, what does that say? And why aren't we going to see the people coming into the streets, coming to Harrisburg? You know, what we've learned these last couple of years. And look, you know, I think we have learned a lesson. In 2010, with all the Lulus going to the town hall meetings, like in Lebanon, the guy screaming his head off, and all the people who've come out this year to the town hall meetings and have really caused a ruckus, I think that sends a clear message that the squeaky wheel will get the grease. So if you get a couple of thousand of active, motivated people to come here to this Capitol, push your way in the door and sit your behind down on the steps, I think someone's going to pay attention.
Well, look what's happened just in the last couple of weeks, Rick, with the Republicans, you know, with their proposal for Medicare. In a few weeks after these congressmen going back and just getting hammered, yelled at, shouted at, it was like a rerun of the health care debate. But only this time, it wasn't the Tea Party people, it was the rank and file, it was your average citizen out there so angry and incensed that how dare they propose to privatize Social Security and then have the audacity to say, well, we're not going to hurt you, it's only those, 50 and below. And now, already, Boehner himself now is backtracking in a few short weeks. That just goes to tell you, show you what can happen when people get out there and unite.
Yep, but May 20th is the date. If nothing gets done, tens of thousands of people across this state are going to lose their unemployment benefits. That means more struggling families. That means higher poverty. That means more suffering. And that means more government spending on social programs and charities. Again, very, very short-sighted. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about unemployment, maybe talk a little bit about my experience. I'd love to hear yours, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Yeah,
It's good to know that the FBI, Justice Department, and federal courts are all over the major crime cases that so dramatically affect millions of Americans, like the 7-year prosecution and $6 million trial of baseball player Barry Bonds. What a waste of time, tax dollars, and prosecutorial credibility. Meanwhile, not a single major player in Wall Street's mugging of our economy has even been charged, much less imprisoned. People were robbed of hundreds of billions of dollars, and millions of jobs, homes, and businesses were lost. Yet the banksters not only skate-free, they're now collecting billions in bonus payments for their work. A New York Times investigative report reveals that top Washington officials, Republicans and Democrats, rushed to the crime scene at the start of the financial crash. They rushed not to arrest anyone, but to stave off any serious investigations of the top Wall Streeters who had obviously cooked their books, fraudulently awarded bonuses to themselves, cashed in on inside information, and lied to regulators. Barry Bonds might have been juiced up on steroids, but these guys were juiced up on hubris and greed, doing criminal damage to America. Yet, the FBI was backed off, the Justice Department averted its eyes, and bank regulators failed to bill criminal cases. Why? Because top politicos, from Bush to Obama, were convinced by their Wall Street confidants that prosecutions would make big investors jittery and endanger the markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, a couple of weeks after Japan's nuclear meltdown began, a photograph ran worldwide showing a trio of the nuclear plant's top corporate executives. They were at the hospital bedside of a victim of radiation poisoning, and they were bowing deeply in apology. Now that's the picture of Wall Street executives that I want to see.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425. Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the wait is. Everything's raisin, but the wait is. Gasoline, groceries, and our hazes. Everything's raisin, but the wait is.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails, or I use them here on the program. I got a hold of this letter to the editor, which, you know, I asked the question why you don't see more of these in local newspapers around the country. I'm not sure, but I love this one. This person writes, "Dear New Hampshire GOP, it's over. We had a good run, you and I. We saw so many things the same way. Taxes, gun rights, immigration, seatbelt laws, and even the occasional social issue. We've been together for 20 years, but now I have to end it. You have labeled me public enemy number one because I'm a union member. I belong to IBEW 2320. I'm also a homeowner. I work and live in New Hampshire, and the wages you think are too good for me go right back into our economy. In the 5 short months since December 1st, I've been called a thug, a criminal, an animal, and a goon. My intelligence has been called into question, as well as my morality. I've been accused of violence and intimidation, and the responsibility for the financial woes of this state has been laid on my shoulders. You've tried to silence those among you who would stand up for me, like Representative Quint of Exeter. You tell me not to take it personally, but it could not be more personal. This goes way beyond ideology. You have insulted me, my family, and my friends again and again. You have embarrassed, you have embraced every negative stereotype you can find about us, and even though a great many of us are the reason you have your majority, you stubbornly refuse to believe that any union member would ever vote Republican. I will continue to support those who supported me, but to the rest of you, goodbye. This woman named Peggy McCarthy. I'm curious why we don't see more of those. Understand, here in the state of Pennsylvania, 51% of union households voted for Pat Toomey. A large number of Republican union members voted for Tom Corbett, yet we keep hearing that same frame. They're greedy, they're lazy, they're overpaid, their benefits are too generous. You know, and I look at this and I go, why aren't we seeing more of these letters? We're talking about job cuts. We're talking about pushing people out in the street, all around the country, cutting union members from state work, taking their rights to unionize away. And I wonder, you know, why we don't see more of that. It's amazing stuff. And the more of these jobs we see go by the wayside, the more we see unemployment rising, and we keep hearing folks wanting to talk about the economy in terms of recovery. And while there are some new jobs being created, this is not a recovery. 62,000 McJobs does not make a recovery. Jobs that pay minimum wage or barely above does not mean we have a smoking economy. We need manufacturing jobs. We need to build things again. We need trade policies that are going to encourage that. And most of all, we need to have a jobs program that helps those folks who are unemployed get back onto the rolls. And, you know, I remember when I was unemployed. You know, there was one time, I've been unemployed twice. Once was back in, right after Bush became president. I was laid off for, it was like 6 weeks. I knew I was coming back. So to be honest, layoff was, as Tom Corbett says, like vacation. And I didn't go out running and looking for other jobs because, you know what? I knew in 6 weeks I was going back to work. So it was just, I'm going to take a pay cut for the next 6 weeks. I'm going to lose, I think it was 2/3 of my pay at the time. That's what it meant then. But I do remember, right when George H.W. Bush was president, I was unemployed, and it was unemployed. There was nobody hiring. There, I knocked on every door, picked up every rock, answered every resume, busted my behind looking for jobs. And the reality was they just weren't there during that recession. There was nothing there, just like there's not now. These jobs just aren't out there. What we need is we need some help in creating these jobs. And all we hear from the Republicans is, hey, we need to cut spending. How's that going to help?
It's not. Yes, here's the irony. The Republicans are taking care of the CEOs. They're taking care of corporate America. And yet, by some conservative estimates, corporate America in this country is holding back $2 trillion that, if put into the economy, would go a long way towards getting us back on some kind of recovery. And beyond that, you look at what we did when the TARP money, we saved these corporations. Not only did they give obscene packages to the very CEOs who almost took their companies down as a payment, as a gratitude, some of them took jobs overseas. Some of the rest of them have not taken the money, including the banks, by the way. We thought that when we'd save the banks that they would do what? They would get the money out. They would make the loans. They would get the economy rolling.
But we knew
they haven't done
that.
It easy.
We
between corporate America and the banks, that we have about $3 trillion. $3 trillion. And where are the Republicans on this
but
issue?
But we knew better than that. You knew it was a false promise. You knew they weren't going to do it. You know, at the end of this, again, you know, you go back to that time frame. We talked about this ad nauseum then. You knew corporate America was not going to side with President Obama. You knew it, just like they didn't want to back when FDR pushed a lot of reforms through. They had to be pushed into it. They had to be wrangled into it. Do you think they, back in the 30s, they really wanted workers to have the right to organize? Do you think they really wanted to pay overtime? Do you think they really wanted to pay workman's comp and unemployment and Social Security? Do you think they wanted any of that? No. They wanted none of it. They wanted subservient, desperate workers that they could pick and choose from and discard at will. That's what they wanted.
You sound like George Carlin.
But it's true. It is true. What it is. These no good thieving. Look, you know, and we hear this frame constantly. Since the 80s, you got to give corporate America credit. They have done a masterful job of reinventing themselves and portraying themselves as the benevolent corporation. Oh, we care about the community and we care about our workers. Nonsense. They care about profit. That's what a corporation is supposed to care about. So this whole idea that there can be a benevolent corporation flies in the face of all logic. Corporations are supposed to be chasing profit. I want them to do that. That's their job. Don't give me a whole bunch of BS. Oh, they're good corporate citizens. No, they're all criminals. They're all going to do what they can do to get away with the shortcut that they can to save themselves money. That's their job. It's government's job to make sure that they don't do the things that are in their interest to make more profit and cheat. Simple.
And what makes no sense? What makes no sense when there's an effort in Congress to start the ball rolling, to keep jobs in this country, and for a short two-year period, interim period, take some money encouraging American corporations to keep their jobs here instead of sending them overseas. Every Republican in Congress voted a resounding no, which it just defies logic. It defies logic. It's a common sense first step to start doing something about rebuilding our economy, rebuilding our manufacturing base.
Again, you start with the premise that they care about this country. You start with the premise that they care about the working people of this country, and the reality is they don't. They care about the businesses. That's it. It's very simple. This isn't rocket science to figure out. They care about one thing, profit motives. Most of them are millionaire businessmen to begin with. Understand who and what they are. See them for what they are. All they care about is the game of business. And to them, it's just that. It's a game. Just like politics, it's just a game. Because afterwards, they go and they have their little shindigs, and they're very cordial and nice to each other. Man, if I was in the Hall of Congress and someone pulled some of the crap that these people pulled, there'd be some smacking going on in the cloakroom. You'd hear some screaming and hollering coming out of there. It'd be like South Korea, them people going after each other. Maybe we need to go back to that. Maybe we need some of that. But I'm telling you, until we, as a society, wake up and understand who these different groups are pandering to, we're going to continue in this divisive politic. You know, I got people who are in the same socioeconomic class as I am advocating policies for folks that we're never going to even see. Because they're that far up the ladder. They live in their gated communities, fly on their corporate private jets, live on their private islands. They don't deal with the rabble. They don't care about you. And they sure as heck don't want to sit next to you at the theater or have dinner anywhere that you can afford to go. It is what it is. Anyway, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after that.
To America, Rick Smith.
It's good to know that the FBI, Justice Department, and federal courts are all over the major crime cases that so dramatically affect millions of Americans, like the 7-year prosecution and $6 million trial of baseball player Barry Bonds. What a waste of time, tax dollars, and prosecutorial credibility. Meanwhile, not a single major player in Wall Street's mugging of our economy has even been charged, much less imprisoned. People were robbed of hundreds of billions of dollars, and millions of jobs, homes, and businesses were lost. Yet the banksters not only skated free, they're now collecting billions in bonus payments for their work. A New York Times investigative report reveals that top Washington officials, Republicans and Democrats, rushed to the crime scene at the start of the financial crash. They rushed not to arrest anyone, but to stave off any serious investigations of the top Wall Streeters who had obviously cooked their books, fraudulently awarded bonuses to themselves, cashed in on inside information, and lied to regulators. Barry Bonds might have been juiced up on steroids, but these guys were juiced up on hubris and greed, doing criminal damage to America. Yet, the FBI was backed off, the Justice Department averted its eyes, and bank regulators failed to bill criminal cases. Why? Because top politicos, from Bush to Obama, were convinced by their Wall Street confidants that prosecutions would make big investors jittery and endanger the markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, a couple of weeks after Japan's nuclear meltdown began, a photograph ran worldwide showing a trio of the nuclear plant's top corporate executives. They were at the hospital bedside of a victim of radiation poisoning, and they were bowing deeply in apology. Now that's the picture of Wall Street executives that I want to see.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
I'm just an average man with an average life. I work from 9 to 5. Hey, hell, I hate the price. All I want is to be left alone in my average home. But why do I always feel like I'm in the twilight zone? And I always feel like somebody's watching me.
Yeah, as long as I live, I'll never know how that guy got his voice that high. You know, Michael Jackson with it. Hey, somebody's watching me. I have no idea, other than maybe a vice.
Yeah.
I just can't figure it out, man. Anyway, Republicans have done something that they promised. Campaign promise honored. They have introduced legislation to abolish the Environmental Protection Agency. That's right. They want to do away with all that clean air and that clean water. Don't need it. Don't worry about it. We go back to smog and acid rain. Go back to drinking brown water. Sounds like a good idea, doesn't it? Anyway, their idea is, you know, they claim that it's that we're duplicating funds. They want to combine the EPA with the Department of Energy, which, if I'm not mistaken, is another one of those things they want to do away with. So if they combine the Department of Energy and the Environmental Protection Agency into one new agency that they want to call the Department of Energy and Environment, will they then campaign on getting rid of the Department of Energy and Environment? Because they wanted to get rid of both of them. And the idea here, again, is to make it weaker, to cut the staff, to make it less... less of something that's going to actually, protect the air we drink, or the water we drink, or the air we breathe. Again, I go back to my idea, and I think it's a good idea, Jake. Go back to paying by the fine. You get a percentage of the fine. I'm liking that more and more every day.
Call it a bounty.
There you go. Bounty, yes. Get those Old West posters. Put GE right there. BP.
Corporate Outlaw.
Exxon Mobil. There you go.
Mobile.
I'm right there. I get you. Anyway, what I've been talking about for a while is this whole idea of alternative energy, you know, the things that we haven't really been paying attention to, that the Chinese are absolutely killing us on. Well, again, the Chinese have reported... in fact, the folks over at Agency France Press, China has more than doubled its target for solar power capacity to 50 gigawatts by 2020. according to state media, as the world's largest polluter steps up its effort to boost clean energy sources. The increased target follows a massive earthquake and tsunami in Japan that triggered the nuclear crisis in the country's northeast and fueled worldwide debate about the safety of atomic power. Again, you know, here in this country, we just kind of just forgot about it, brushed it under the rug, don't worry about it. The monkey thing. We've got the monkey syndrome with the hands over our eyes, ears, and mouth. You know, we can't see or hear anything. Now, China's saying, look, you know, we need to get off the juice. We need to get off of the oil, the nuclear. 50 gigawatts by the end of this decade. 50 gigawatts. That is just amazing. Currently, the country has installed capacity of just about 1 gigawatt. So they've got their work ahead of them. But again, they are full head of steam. They have dedicated themselves to it. And, again, they're going to be kicking our butts on this. And we're just still arguing about drill, baby, drill. And we got our lobbyists going in there doing the shill, baby, shill. Our infrastructure's crumble, baby, crumble. And yet, no job creation. And this is a perfect way to create jobs in this country. Perfect way to do it. Getting solar panels on my house, Jake. Sign the paperwork today.
Good for you.
Within 5 weeks, they tell me I will have solar power, and I will be able to generate electricity in my home and sell back to the grid, creating jobs. And it's not all that. I mean, it's short-term expensive. Long-term, it's going to pay off. It's going to take me about 6 years to pay it back. But the reality is, look, A, it's going to help get off the juice. It's going to create jobs. The solar panels are made here in the U.S. Going to have workers. Going to install them here in the U.S. This is a win-win-win all the way around. Got a little state money, little federal money. Made it really affordable. This is how you create jobs. You give people like me the ability. I wish, I got to be honest, I wish there were a plan like they had in Germany, where I could have taken, it's going to cost me out of my pocket about $21,000 for a 6.5 kilowatt system. I wish there were a plan like in Germany where they give you like a 1%, 1.5% loan for 10 years to pay it off so you didn't have to pull it out of your pocket. But that's a hope down the road. But again, you know, these are the kind of things we should be doing as a matter of policy. Because I don't know anybody who you'd say, you know what? If, you know, we'll get you a loan, it's going to cost you about 1.5%. You'll pay it back over the next 6 years, and then it's yours forever. Who wouldn't say, go right on ahead?
Now, you get the federal subsidy in your tax breaks?
What I'll get next year is I will get the rebate. It's a 30% rebate, and that will come in my taxes next year. So the system overall for this 30-panel system that I'm getting on my house is about $35,000. The money I get from the state's close to five. That's going to be almost 11. So that's going to take me down to about $20,000 out of pocket. And it's going to, you know, and the guy said the first day you go out there and you see that gauge on your house that normally spins like crazy, when you see it going backwards, that means they're paying you.
Nice.
It is nice. I mean, and that's the, you know, that, and then you combine that with a little conservation and you start thinking about, you know, how to save a little bit. These are the kind of things that we should be doing as a matter of policy, not just hodgepodge hoping one guy is going to do it, but as a matter of policy. And that's what the Chinese are doing. They're saying, look, we're going to build massive solar banks and massive solar farms and wind farms. They're going to do all that, which is going to put us behind them. You know, again, you know, they're not stupid. We're the dumb ones. We're the ones mired in this infighting. We're beating the crud out of each other before we even begin to talk about taking on anybody else. Because it's my ideology. I'm going to drive my big gas guzzler. And I want oil. I want a drill, baby, drill. I don't mind drilling. All I'm saying is, aren't there better solutions? Can't we take advantage of opportunities that are in front of us? Like, you know, every state building, every public high school, every public elementary school, every college in the country has solar panels on it. You know, in Germany, the billboards that have their silly little slogan signs on it, like we've got all over the place, those are all solar panels. Seems logical to me. But evidently in this country, no, we don't need to do that. We're better than them Germans. And what does it put us in? We're stuck fiddling around in that big sandbox. We're stuck there. We're at the mercy of a bunch of people wearing sheets. Whenever they want to jack up the oil price, the price at the pump goes up. And who does it hurt? It hurts me. It hurts working people. I'm sorry, I don't make $1 million a year like the blowhards on the right. I still got to worry about putting food on the table for the kids.
Well, you talked about the sandbox. I just heard last night there was a man from the intelligence community. I believe he was retired, and he said, in fact, he was tied to the Bush administration, and he said it was nonsense what the Bush administration said about weapons of mass destruction. He said it was all about oil. We went into Iraq. One of the big reasons, if not the reason, was the oil. He said, make no mistake about that. And you talked about oil. Boy, that was a big mistake, huh?
Well, yeah,
we'd go in there and they would not only pay for the war, we'd get a nice little fat profit. How'd we get out on that?
Well, we haven't. Well, they
disaster.
Told us they'd be able to fund their own war. But look, you know, this, again, goes back to the failure, and understand history a little bit. This goes back to the failure of Reagan. Again, the first thing he did was tore the solar panels off the White House. And my wife hates me reminding everybody of that. But it's true. It's what he did. And that was the signal back to the Sheikis. We're your guy. You keep giving us cheap oil and we won't do any of that other stuff. We'll be your number one customer. And you know what? The rest of the world said, well, we better do something else. And they did. And now here we are behind the eight ball, paying $4 a gallon for gas, looking at $5 by summer, looking at each other going, well, we got to do something. Let's drill, baby, drill. Even though we know the drilling isn't going to get us out of this. Smart policy, smart investment, that's going to help us. Had we listened to Carter, had we gotten off the juice when we had the chance, you know, we'd have been okay.
Well, I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
Had we had that 20%, we are nowhere near going into Iraq. We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Right. The Rick Smith Show.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13. the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. Our good friend Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you very much.
So I guess Medicare is back on the chopping block?
Well, it looked like it was. It looked really like it was. And then the Republicans now, after this sort of narrative that's been going on all week, now saying no. They're saying, the media has created a false narrative of retreat, and they're standing up for Paul Ryan's budget resolution. I have to say, it would have been very easy to create this false narrative after Representative Dave Camp, the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, said yesterday that he was not going to allow that Paul Ryan's budget to pass through his committee, and after Eric Cantor basically said that the president had excoriated it so much that it had basically, you know, lost its power. So it's a little odd that they're saying this. But anyway, leadership put out a statement today of the Republicans saying that they've begun negotiations with Democrats. But we're united in our approach to achieve real and immediate spending cuts and reforms today. And they're saying they're committed to their budget and to preserve and strengthen Medicare.
So at the end of the day, they're still committed after all the beatings they took in their week off, after all of the town halls, after all of the outrage, 73% of the American people saying no, leave Medicare alone. Our ideologues on the extreme right are going to go full steam ahead.
Yeah, and this is really interesting. One Republican aide said today that the overall message from voters was support. Yes, there were hecklers. Yes, there were obnoxious folks. Clearly not everybody agrees. And one budget expert is saying that Republicans are saying to him, quite a few Republicans are saying, they think the outbursts were staged by interest groups and that they weren't indicative of how voters feel. And I'm not sure they're right.
I know they're not right. You know why they think this? Because it's exactly what they did in 2010.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if you're used to doing that kind of stuff to the opponents, when it happens to you, you automatically assume that you're getting your own medicine back. The reality is I think the American people are very happy with Medicare, and I hope the Republicans keep going down this path. It means their demise. Some news at the pump?
Yeah, very interesting news at the pump. The prices are dropped. And a couple of things happening. One is that Attorney General Eric Holder wrote a letter this afternoon to the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, all state attorneys general, the Federal Trade Commission, Departments of Agriculture, Energy, Treasury, Securities and Exchange Commission, the Board of Governors of the Fed, and the FBI. And it's about the Oil and Gas Price Fraud Working Group, which most of us didn't know existed. And he's thanking them for their leadership and participation in it, and basically saying that, look, this working group's going to enable us to formalize our efforts, and they want to protect consumers. And he says that there are lawful market forces that lead to price fluctuations with wholesale and retail prices in markets regarding oil, which has dropped significantly. But he says this working group was created to identify whether fraud or manipulation played any role in the wholesale and retail markets as prices increased. If wholesale prices continue to decrease, fraud or manipulation must be allowed to prevent price decreases from being passed on to consumers at the pump. And he directs the working group to focus on that area and to be prepared to report on any developments as well as any proposed action steps at their next meeting.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. But at the end of the day, until we get off the juice, until we have policy coming out of Washington that gets us away from oil, pushing solar and geothermal and all those other things, public transportation, the prices are just going to keep rising anyway.
Well, that's another piece, but not something really that House Republican Representative Michael Burgess would agree with. He's from Texas, and he said today during today's Joint Economic Committee hearing that the House passage of legislation to speed up Gulf of Mexico oil and gas leasing and to require leasing off Virginia's coast that happened yesterday sent a message to the oil market about future supply. And basically he said that they saw that the Republican House was serious about addressing the issue of the supply of oil and dropped the prices.
Wow, nice spin. Even though we know that even if you gave those leases out today, it'd go on ahead, it'd be years before we saw that oil.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Stopped you in your tracks, didn't I?
No, I'm just saying, that's his narrative.
It is. A strong statement coming out of the White House again on Syria.
Very strong statement came out this evening. Strongly exploring the Syrian government's use of violence and mass arrests in response to the ongoing demonstrations. Friday, there was a day of defiance by protesters all over the country. And they say, we again salute the courage of Syrian protesters for insisting on their right to express themselves, and we regret the loss of life on all sides. And it basically says that this security crackdown isn't going to restore stability, and it's not going to stop the demands for change. And it refers to false reform announcements like ending the emergency law and then expanding the scope of arrest without even the pretense of judicial warrants. It also says that the Syrian government continues to follow the lead of its Iranian ally in resorting to brute force and flagrant violations of human rights.
And campaign Obama's got some good news today?
Yes, indeed. The National Education Association, which is the country's largest union with more than 3 million members, has asked its members to support his bid for a second term in the White House.
Interesting. I think a bit premature, but interesting nonetheless. Anything else going on tonight in Washington?
Well, the president, of course, has been to Fort Campbell, Kentucky today, where he met with Navy SEAL Team 6, the SEAL team that took out Osama bin Laden. He met them with Vice President Biden. They were both briefed on the mission by members of the team. Then, of course, he gave them the very high award. It was called the Presidential Unit Citation, the highest such honor that can be given to a unit. And he met with the 160th Special Operations Aviation Unit, the 5th Special Forces Group, thanked them for their service, and spoke to troops.
Excellent. An excellent way to end off the week. Victoria Jones, appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. And now let's find out what's going on across town.
Yeah, big story coming out of Harrisburg Patriot News concerning the city of Harrisburg, Rick. Two new eye-popping offers were presented to Harrisburg officials Thursday that proponents say could go a long way towards delivering the city from its crushing incendiary debt problem. New York businessman Jacob Fryman is offering an upfront payment of $140 million to lease and operate the Harrisburg incinerator for 99 years. But in a large catch, Fryman also said the offer stands only if Harrisburg officials also agree to his previous offer of $215 million to lease and operate the city's parking garages for 75 years. If the city does that, Fryman said, it would have cash in hand to pay off the $220 million in outstanding principal owed on the incinerator and be able to start rebuilding its fiscal future. The second major offer came from county over, the Lancaster County Solid Waste Management Authority, which increased its offer to buy the Harrisburg incinerator from $45 million to $124 million. Some of the reactions, Robert Fillman, who's the mayor's Mayor Linda Thompson's spokesman, said Thompson still is reviewing the proposals and will have no comment at this time. Likewise, Mark Kurowski, the chairman of the Harrisburg Authority, said it's way too early to make commitments. We have interest and activity and can begin figuring out how the right offer could help us with the overall fiscal recovery plan, according to Councilwoman Patty Kim. Councilman Brad Publinski agreed all the proposed offers deserve a closer look, but he said at first blush it is difficult for him to accept the linkage proposal by Fryman. It's concerning to me to have one entity come in and take control of two of the biggest money-making entities in the city. The persistence of Mr. Fryman is impressive, according to Mr. Publinski, but we must really have something here that he wants, and I think that should only make us want to look more carefully at the details that he is proposing. No decision on either plan is likely before the May 27th date, the tentative release date for the fiscal recovery plan being drafted by the Harrisburg Act 47 or Distressed Municipality Team. One thing I hope through all this, I hope one thing that isn't missed is the future and the concerns of the workers at the incinerator and the parking garage. But we stay tuned. We shall have to see. That's an ongoing situation. Solanco School District, they have come up with a unique proposal. They've come up with a $1,000 educational enhancement grant to lure our students from troubled schools into some choice proponents. Lancaster County School District, Solanco, has launched a new program aimed at enticing school students to attend the district's own virtual academy instead of some other cyber school by offering a $1,000 educational enhancement grant. Solanco School Board, which approved the program this week, sees this as a way to avoid the $8,300 per student bill that the district must pay to a cyber school when a district student enrolls. District spokesman Keith Kaufman said having those students transfer to the district's Solanco Virtual Academy could save local taxpayers as much as $500,000. It's another choice out there, Kaufman said, and also provides a savings to Solanco taxpayers, which is always important, especially in those current challenging economic times. However, State Education Secretary Ronald Tumalz has concerns about the enticements. His press secretary, Timothy Ehler, said school districts may not charge families for requirements under school laws. If a school district believes its programs is high quality, it should allow the program to stand on its own merits. Interesting development in the wine and spirits. Now, this is unique. There's an ongoing effort, as you know, Rick, to try to sell. The Republicans have been trying to sell the wine and spirits for the last couple of decades. There's an intense effort this time. It seems that one of the Republicans up on the Hill has a different slant on it. His name is John Payne. He's actually from Derry Township. The wine spirits, he has a suggestion to sell wine and spirits at the beer distributorships. He said he will soon introduce a bill to allow the roughly 1,200 beer distributorships statewide to apply for a free permit to carry wine and spirits. Wholesalers would also have the option to apply for a permit to sell wine and liquor, but it would cost about $50 million of the state's money. Payne's proposal, the latest salvo in debate over whether Pennsylvania should sell its state-owned liquor stores to private operators, would leave the state liquor stores intact. Beer distributorships are already running a parallel network and have the cold storage, the warehouse space, and the knowledge of how to work with the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board, according to Representative Payne. State House Majority Leader Mike Terzay, one of the leaders of the Republicans in the House, is pushing for a privatization plan soon that will eliminate state liquor stores entirely. Now, one Iowa government money should be used selling booze, according to Steve Mixman, who's a spokesman for the House Republicans. A spokesman, however, for the Liquor Control Board declined to comment until the board can see the actual bill. Another roadblock could be the state liquor state employee union. Wendell Young, the union's head, is staunchly against all privatization effort. He cited a recent study by the Centers for Disease Control Prevention and warned against further privatization of alcoholic sales. Doubling the amount of locations and putting in the hands of beer monopoly isn't going to help anyone, according to Young. Even those in favor of privatization don't think there should be an extreme increase in locations. Additionally, Young said beer distributorships do not have the experience in selling hard liquor. He said it's almost impossible to get served underage or while intoxicated at a state liquor store, but that teens don't seem to have any trouble getting their hands on beer, which is absolutely true. I'm not so sure this is going to fly, but, you know, it's a unique proposal. So again, stay tuned on that one. Back to you, Rick.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up.
Rock and roll.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
In 1897, miners at collieries throughout northeastern Pennsylvania's anthracite coal region had had enough. Conditions were grueling and life was difficult. Miners were frequently cheated out of pay, overcharged for supplies, some they never wanted or received, forced to live in captive company-owned towns, shop at overpriced company-owned stores, even mandated to use the company doctor since fees were deducted automatically from the miner's pay. This, combined with mine owners forcing longer unpaid hours and the Anti-Immigrant Campbell Act of 1897, taxing mine owners for the use of non-native labor, drove miners to strike. Spontaneously starting in Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley, workers marched north to get other miners to join in the struggle. Their demands were modest, a 10-cent pay raise and a reduction in the cost of gunpowder. They also wanted the freedom to shop in non-company-owned stores of their choosing and see a doctor not owned by the coal company. As the miners moved northward toward Hazleton, mine owners, determined to crush the workers' protest, sent their company-paid police force and strikebreakers. Local law enforcement was also on the side of mine owners. Luzerne County Sheriff James Martin, a former mine foreman, deputized 102 local men, arming them with Winchester rifles and sidearms. The group of some 400 miners marching peacefully and unarmed in rows of fours moved onward toward Latimer. Stephen Urich, joining the group outside of Hazleton, taking with him the American flag, shouted, "We have nothing to worry about because we have the American flag to protect us." Within hours, in a hail of Winchester bullets, Stephen Urich was gunned down in cold blood, his beloved American flag drenched in his blood and the blood of those who lay murdered and wounded. Eyewitnesses said the sheriff and his hired killers mowed the men down like grass. More than 20 men were murdered on that September day and more than 50 were wounded, many shot in the back in Labor's Forgotten Massacre. The sheriff and his murderous band were tried for their part in the Latimer Massacre and found not guilty of murdering 20 unarmed peaceful demonstrators. Lest we never forget, or as the wife of a miner whose life was stolen from him told her children, "You can forgive, but you can't forget." This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.ricksmithshow.com.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. I was watching C-SPAN this morning, and the NRA was having their little get-together in Pittsburgh. And it was kind of creepy. I got to be honest. Kind of creepy seeing a bunch of white guys in suits walking around holding guns for no other reason than just to display them. I guess it's just, hey, look at me. I've got a gun. No real purpose. Just in the most awkward of way holding these big guns. Go, maybe, you know, the first thing that popped in my head, maybe a little inadequacy there. Maybe you got some problems, you know, a little, you know, I don't know. That's all I can think of because there were these monstrous guns. You know, I don't know. You know, it just is what it is. And what we've, just, you know, really just really weird. I don't think I've seen that many white people in one place in my whole life. I mean, it was just a sea. They panned out over the crowd. Just a sea of white. Angry white people. Anyway, a story out of Texas. A four-year-old Texas boy was shot to death this week while he and his brother were playing with one of the rifles in their home. The child was struck in the abdomen by a shot from a bolt-action rifle that his five-year-old was handling in the back room of their home. The deputy said the boy's parents were home at the time of the shooting on Wednesday night. The names were not released to the family members. The chief deputy said we're still in the preliminary stages of investigation. But, again, sad, sad story. Here, one of those situations where, and I know my NRA people who love to just hold their guns are going to disagree, but there are a couple of parents. Somebody should be going to jail or something. A 4- and a 5-year-old can get a hold of it. I don't know. UPI reported that a California Sheriff's Department in Riverside, California, had a ride-along program. You know, if you're one of these Explorer Scouts, you can go. It's somewhere between 14 and 21. You can go with the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department, ride around and do the whole I'm going to be a cop for a day thing. Only problem is it turns out that the sheriff's deputies couldn't stop having sex with the young girls. In back-to-back weeks, two deputies, both of them 30, have been arrested for having sex with a 16- and a 17-year-old girl. They have now suspended the program because they don't want next week to have to lose another deputy. Another.
Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, kind of crazy. Just kind of nuts. An interesting story out of Canada. Evidently, you used to, in Canada, has a defense that you were too drunk to be held accountable for anything that you've done. So you could actually go to court and say, honest, officer, I was too, honest, judgey, I'm too drunk. And they would, I guess, let you go. But not in this case. They struck down the law for this defendant who claimed he was too drunk for the crimes that he claims committed. Again, it was one of these... he was, I almost can't say it. The younger guy was sexually assaulting a 65-year-old woman in a wheelchair. And I'm going, really? Have you ever been that drunk, Jake?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. I think he's just a sick guy.
Ever.
But, you know, there have been some times where I have been drunk enough to do some really crazy stuff. Never the guy with the lampshade. That was never my deal. I have known guys who have done that. And then the other part where the, well, you know, never mind. Not going down that path. Here's an interesting story. An Iowa man allegedly robbed a bank with a note demanding $80. He's pled not guilty to second degree robbery. He walked into the bank, put down a note, said, I want $80. The camera caught him, you know, caught his face, caught him changing clothes. They caught another security camera at the Waterloo Public Library where he went. He was then arrested at a homeless shelter later in the day. They are holding him for $80. Stop and think about this. For $80, they are holding him in jail on $100,000 bond. This takes me back to, we don't have any more colorful bank robbers. We've got poor saps like this guy just needing a couple of bucks to get through the next couple of days to feed himself or to clothe himself, and a desperate guy at that. He is going to get the full weight of the law on his back. In jail, going to sit and rot until a year down the line, they finally get him into a courtroom. Yet the people who crashed this economy, the CEO class, when they rob and pillage and steal, you know, when they cause chaos and mayhem and destroy people's lives, they don't sit in jail. They don't pay the piper. which is why I go back to this. There'll be no more John Dillingers, no more Babyface Nelsons. Those days of the Hollywood bank robber and the shootouts and all that, long done. What we've got now are very colorful criminals on Wall Street who hijack banks with a computer. Because that's what's happened to us. We have become a very sterile society where thievery happens with a computer, not at the barrel of a gun. And the people who do dumb things like go in and rob a bank for $80, they're the ones who are going to be paying $30,000, $40,000 a year to incarcerate in our private prisons so that the criminals on Wall Street can benefit from this guy's bad situation. How perverse is that? Sad, sad, sad. Anyway, I hope everybody has a great weekend. My son's T-ball practice games, again, game number 3. This Saturday, going to have fun doing that. We're going to go out to the baseball games on Saturday night and Sunday afternoon here in town. I'm going to take the kids to see that because, evidently they're winning. Did you know the Senators are actually winning? They're in second place. The kids love to go and get all sugared up. And problem is when they get all sugared up, I can't go and take them home and dump them on mom. I'm going to be the one who's going to have to take them because the Mother's Day present that I have for my wife is that she gets to leave the house for 2 days. She gets to go away.
You can't limit their intake.
Well, either one way or another, that or get a lot of duct tape.
Or extra batting practice.
Well, we shall see. But that's going to be the Mother's Day present. My wife gets to go away for 2 days and do her scrapbooking thing, which she does a nice job of. I don't understand it. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but keeps her out of the bars, I guess. So it is what it is, man. And it keeps her out of the shoe stores, so I don't have to worry about that.
Keeps her out of the Ming fur stores, too, right?
Well, if she was in the store, she'd be in the store by herself. Because homie don't play that game.
Oh, you're a cheap husband.
That's it. I don't buy into... I think you want me to have.
So if that's her only sin, I think you're getting off lucky.
I didn't say it was a sin. It's her deal. But anyway, I hope everybody has a great weekend. Have a wonderful Mother's Day. Treat them well because they really are the most important people in our lives. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, go to thericksmithshow.com. You can download our podcast. If you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I look forward to being back here on Monday night. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, in amorous array. Democracy's coming to the USA.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio W.
Nicely and not too painfully, I hope. But recovering, I do know. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, headonradionetwork.com. Thank you to John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, host of the Australian home office. And thanks to Ben Birch, who's fundraising as well at whiterosesociety.org. He badly needs your help, too. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.